A death spiral in Gaza with no end in sight, a Middle East peace process that's been moribund for years. What's the point of talking solutions when not even a truce is in sight? In New York next week, France, slated to co-chair with Saudi Arabia, what's officially billed as a UN International Conference for the Peaceful Settlement of the Question of Palestine and the Implementation of the Two-State Solution. Emmanuel Macron strongly suggested that that would be the venue where he might recognize a Palestinian state. Is it still the case? We'll ask about the pressure on the French president to dial it back. With the U.S. silent, as Israel pounds Gaza and expands illegal Jewish settlements in the West Bank, what does recognizing Palestinian statehood change in practice? On Friday, Paris to host a springboard event, you might call it. We'll hear from civil society participants in a conference hosted by the Paris Peace Forum. How to find common ground to proposals that can win over a population where positions have hardened for so long. Today in the France 24 debate, we're wondering if it's a utopia or is a two-state solution the only realistic option. Joining us from here in Paris, taking part in that conference, East Jerusalem native Nevin Sanduka, regional director for the Alliance for Middle East Peace. It's an umbrella group, right, of various civic organizations. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
Nobi Bar Yaakov, associate fellow at the Geneva Center for Security Policy. We're used to having you by video link from London. Welcome to our studios in Paris.
Thank you very much for having me in the studio.
Former French ambassador to Saudi Arabia and Qatar, Bertrand Besancenot. Good to see you.
Thank you very much.
And France 24's Shirley Sitbon covering it all. How are you?
Okay, François.
All right. By the way, on the go, you can always listen to the show wherever podcasts are streamed. Okay, so with no end in sight in Gaza, Israel's traditional allies no longer able to ignore their own public opinions. And it's on a visit to the Egyptian side of the Gaza border in April that Emmanuel Macron pointed to a formal recognition of a Palestinian state coming potentially, quote, in the coming months. That was followed up by a tweet, this tweet on April the 11th, where Macron said, I support the legitimate right of Palestinians to a state and to peace, just as I support the right of Israelis to live in peace and security, both recognized by their neighbors. The upcoming conference on the two-state solution this June must be a turning point. That conference is the one next week. Mm-hmm. But as the conference draws closer, France's president seems to be hedging his bets, listing conditions like when he spoke to reporters on a trip to Singapore 2 weeks ago.
The creation of a Palestinian state must follow the release of hostages, the demilitarization of Hamas, and Hamas not being involved in its governance. It must also be accompanied by a reform of the Palestinian Authority and must be a state that recognizes Israel and its right to live in security.
Bertrand Besancenot, now, at no point has Emmanuel Macron stated categorically, I will recognize a Palestinian state in New York mid-June. But do you, judging by the wording, the diplomatic ease that we're that we've just unveiled here, is he dialing it back?
But we have heard exactly what he said in Singapore, where it was said in diplomatic terms. This is clear. The intention of recognizing a Palestinian state is clear. Now the matter is when and how. Of course, there is the opportunity of the conference in New York. And of course, I cannot speak for President Macron, but my understanding is that the decision is certainly made in his mind, but he would wish to have more a collective move instead of French alone decision.
Collective means who?
But partners like UK, Canada, Belgium, or others. At least it is my understanding that he thinks it would be much more important if you had a move. And in particular, this conference in New York has a very clear purpose, which is to launch a kind of momentum in favor of the solution of two states, building on the fact that a huge majority of states have already recognize the Palestinian state. So the purpose is very clear. Now, of course, as you said, there are pressure coming from different sides, and there are eight groups working in New York already. And of course, the decision will be made knowing what can be said in the communiqué and on what President Macron and others can rely to make their own decision. So I think the aim is clear. The timing is still a question mark.
The timing is still a question mark. So if you're a betting man, would you say, yes, he will, in New York, say, I recognize a Palestinian state, or the stars not aligned?
My personal feeling is that, no, he will wait to see exactly what will be said in the communiqué. If there is, for example, a very compelling process towards the creation of a Palestinian state, this might assist. It is true also that the only person who can really put pressure on the Israeli is President Trump. Mm. So there are already, of course, discussion, and I'm sure that to take the other person who will be important on that, it is the Saudi Crown Prince. But on one hand, he made it very clear his position. On the other hand, he knows that President Trump is the only one to be able to make pressure on Netanyahu. So I don't know exactly how he will manage. So this is the problem, not the objective. The problem is the timing and the modalities.
All right, I want to talk about those protagonists with Shirley Sipton. But before I do, let me give you a few more of the little elements we're getting regarding this conference next week. French newspaper of record Le Monde harks back to Macron's initial hope of what Ambassador Besancenot just described, this snowball effect with other European allies joining the initiative. In its reporting, it says that without that support, Emmanuel Macron could opt for a gradual formula. For instance, the promise of statehood linked to the disarmament of Hamas and a reform of the Palestinian Authority. A little bit what we heard from that clip from Singapore. Without that support, but CNN, speaking to a presidential palace source here in Paris, noticed a bit of equivocation on the equivocation, if you will. We can clearly see that some have an interest in suggesting that we are not moving in the direction of recognition. That is false. We are determined to recognize a Palestinian state in order to create the conditions for the state's existence. Great quote, Shirley Sitbon, but of course it still doesn't say when the French president will recognize a Palestinian state.
Yes, I mean, he could say what he said when we heard him earlier, saying, yes, we're recognizing it, but with a timetable and all of the conditions. It's still different from the situation today where France did not set that timetable. It always said that it was waiting for the right time and then it will declare, will recognize Palestine's independence. And now it's moving around, it's shifting a bit its usual approach. Does it make a difference? Maybe he felt he was forced to do this because of the situation in Gaza, because of what's happening in the West Bank. The fact that Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir were pushing for this or saying that they really, we're seeing it on the ground in the West Bank. He felt that he had to do something now. Otherwise, well, you know, this would remain in history as France not doing anything when so many countries have recognized.
So both of those far-right ministers this week sanctioned by the UK, Australia, and Canada. Does that point to the kind of snowball, enough of the snowball effect that Ambassador Besancenot was referring to there?
Yes, but I wouldn't say ironically, but at the same time, they're saying that if Emmanuel Macron does recognize Palestine's independence, the fact that it's a state, then they will, you know, they will move even faster in the West Bank and claim new territory. So it's, you know, France is always also afraid of that situation, of actually encouraging that type of extremist cycle, and at the same time being just left behind with a recognition which won't have much positive effect, but more of a negative effect.
And we've had plenty of coverage of this flotilla for Gaza that in the last week, the Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg, but a household name here in France is that French member of the European Parliament of Palestinian origin, Rima Hassan. Again, these things that are in the public eye, the strike that we saw of dockers in Marseille who didn't want to export French military goods to Israel, does that weigh on Macron?
It's difficult to say. I mean, I guess everything weighs. The dockers story was a bit shocking, though, because France always said that it did not send any weapons to Israel, only defensive elements for the Iron Dome. So here we're actually seeing that France did not really say the truth. There were secret shipments. They said that they were sending it to Israel, but then Israel would export it to another country. So that's something that I guess the government can't just not react to. I guess it does have some kind of influence, but there's so many elements at the same time. I guess it's not as major of what's actually going on the ground. That's the most important effect for Emmanuel Macron.
Nivin Sanduk, again, with the situation, what it is, with what Shirley just described, those ministers saying, well, if you recognize a Palestinian state, we're going to have even more settlements. Well, a country like France recognizing a Palestinian state, is it just a symbol?
It is a symbol, but not just a symbol. First of all, the urgency on the ground. As a Palestinian who've lived in all my life in Palestine, I have never seen the situation far worse than this. There is mass murder happening in Gaza. People are being starved and being killed where they're going there to pick up their food. They're also being targeted. The settlements and the settlement expansion in the West Bank is continuing as well. Settler violence, there's no stopping for the settler violence. Just today, there were more incidents in Nablus and main cities in the West Bank as well. Closures and checkpoints, disconnect of West Bank cities from one another. Freedom of movement, we cannot talk about it anymore because it doesn't exist. So there are urgency on the ground right now. So even if we're saying this is just a symbol and we're afraid that if recognition happens, then the Israeli government might do extra measures. Honestly, I don't know what these extra measures are. And honestly speaking, the recognition is very important for us as Palestinians right now because it might be one way where Israel can be held accountable under the international humanitarian law as one state actually invading and attacking another state, which is the state of Palestine. Right now, we're not a state, an official state of Palestine. Being two equals under international humanitarian law, and I'll leave it to the experts here, have a different implication if we're talking about it from the international humanitarian law perspective. At the same time, it's really important, I think, for the international leaders, starting from France, to recognize the state of Palestine, because what is happening in Palestine is not only staying in occupied Palestine. It's actually spinning outwards in the form of Islamophobia, anti-Semitism. And I'm pretty sure every single citizen have witnessed that in their own countries, most probably France as well. Anti-Semitism has grown, has enormously increased. Islamophobia has enormously increased. The demonstrations that are happening all over the world, because there is a need to basically control the situation, end the war. This is the first thing and most important thing is to end the war, to stop the killing of the Palestinians, to bring back humanitarian aid, and of course, to release the hostages. And both Palestinians and Israelis are demanding this. In fact, just tomorrow, there's going to be a very big conference in Paris calling for the recognition of the Palestinian state, calling for ending the war and bringing back the hostages.
Yeah, I want to talk more about how you implement that two-state solution in a bit. But first, just to be complete about this, does he or does he not recognize a Palestinian state? When you see Emmanuel Macron saying, well, first we need to make sure there's no Hamas, what's your reaction?
First of all, I think it's really important to look at what President Mahmoud Abbas has stated this morning. And actually, President Macron has retweeted exactly what President
in the last 24 hours.
Exactly. So we were talking about the Palestinian Authority is willing to do the reforms. Even President Abbas condemned the 7th of October. And I think right now we are at every Palestinian is actually saying we need for Hamas to disarm. And we need to have a reform within the Palestinian Authority itself.
Now, Naomi Bar-Yarkov, just to be complete, there's this conference in New York next week,
yes.
The conference you're attending on Friday here in Paris. In between the two, there's a G7 summit. And Emmanuel Macron will be, at one point or another, sitting down with a Donald Trump, who's already blasted next week's conference at the UN.
Where he's called for states not to attend, and he's called for his own staff not to attend, State Department staff not to attend. So, I mean, and he is withdrawing his own staff from embassies in the neighboring countries to Iran, certainly all Iraq, but also Kuwait and Bahrain. So, you know, there's also that preparation for potential Israeli strike. And all this, you can't ignore it because it's all Middle East and it's all related. So, you know, if he hardens his stance against Hamas, which is funded by Iran and armed by Iran, then he's going to take a much, much harsher stance. So, A, to answer your question of what Macron is going to do, it depends on what happens on all of those other fronts. And I don't think Macron will act alone. And I don't think he will act necessarily against Trump, because he will speak to him before he makes a decision. And he tends to pivot, Macron. He always.
So you're saying it'll be Macron who pivots more than Donald Trump?
I'm not saying he pivots more. They both pivot. I'm not. There's not a competition of who pivots more, and they're very different characters. So I would not like to compare the two at all. But
thank you.
I'm not comparing. But he is impulsive, and he does pivot. And I think he will be advised, well advised, to consult broadly about the ramifications. And I think that is actually what he's going to do. Now, the Élysée came out with the palace. They basically published the letter that Naveen has very eloquently outlined just now. And you know, Abbas is 89 years old. He's deeply unpopular. He's viewed as a dictator who has not served his own people. I mean, all the governments, Israeli government, Palestinian government in the West Bank and Hamas in Gaza, were elected democratically, but not acting democratically, acting in an autocratic fashion, and not serving the interests of their own people. So it's very clear that we need changes in all, you know, those areas. So, you know, so the fact that Abbas writes that this is going to happen, it's a beginning of a process, but he needs to commit to the reforms. We need to see what exactly.
So there needs to be pressure on him?
I'm sorry?
There needs to be pressure on him?
It's imminent. It's, as Naveen just said, it's urgent. It's beyond urgent. The situation has never been as catastrophic as it is in both the West Bank and Gaza. And the West Bank isn't spoken very much about, but there is basically forced movement of Palestinians from very, very large areas in very large numbers. You know, you're seeing dozens of thousands. It's not 100 here or 5 there. And, you know, numbers, and that isn't getting enough attention. And that's where the danger is. And Gaza, of course, you know, is on the brink of a civil war because there's armament of factions against Hamas by Israel.
By Israel.
So, yes, I know. Getting there. So it's, you know, you are in a very volatile situation. So if you're recognizing a state, what are you recognizing? And are you doing it alone? No, it's much better to do it in a united fashion with a declaration of what this actually means and not what needs to happen. So timing, as Bertrand said, is of the essence. And things can go ripple in very negative directions. I mean, the trajectories at the moment are very negative. The question is, how does Macron help to reverse them?
Well, we'll get a bellwether of all of that coming from Riyadh, probably. The Times of Israel reporting this Thursday that the Saudi crown prince has told his staff to keep his plane to hand, just in case he does want to jet over to New York and join Macron in person. Bertrand Besancenot, the idea is if MBS Mohammed bin Salman shows up, it means something's happening, and perhaps we will get that recognition of a Palestinian state. If he doesn't,
To be frank, you know, when there will be a recognition by France of a state of Palestine, it will be a significant move because France is a permanent member of the Security Council, that he has. Our country has good friends in the world, so it can facilitate the same decision by others. But also because France is an active player in the Middle East, and Macron has been quite active during the last period. Now,
he's been quite active, but as Shirley was pointing out, he hasn't done that arms embargo that we saw General de Gaulle do in 1967, for instance.
No. But I'm not putting the General de Gaulle and him in the same category. if I may, you know, to make his decision, I think there are two factors. The first one is, of course, he will talk with President Trump in the G7. Well, we know what is the American position, but he will try certainly to say we need to do something. The conference in itself, especially because it is not a French initiative, it is a Saudi-French initiative. And we know that President Trump wants to have, at some point, a normalization between Saudi Arabia and Israel. So the other person...
Would you say that Donald Trump is a loves Saudi Arabia more, even more than Israel?
No, no, I don't say that. But President Trump has visited the Gulf. He was in Saudi Arabia. The message that he heard from all the Gulf countries, in fact, not only Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. was a very clear message. That means we are ready to recognize, but of course, it can be only in the framework of the establishment of a clear, compelling process towards the establishment of a Palestinian state. So he heard that, and he knows that if he wants, as he sees himself as a man of peace, if he wants to achieve that, he has to take into account what is, of course, the Israeli ally, but also the Saudi ally, which is extremely important for him. So I think that for the time being, you will get discussion between Trump and President Macron. But certainly the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia is waiting to see what are the things that can be really expected. If there is, at least for me it is the minimum, real in the communique, something which will show a real commitment to a process, a real process, a compelling process toward the establishment of a Palestinian state, I'm sure that he will come, of course. If he's not sure, this is why the discussions that are going on in the different groups are important. And this is why I think we are in a moving situation. So this is why it's a little bit difficult to bet on what will be decided. We know what is the outcome at the end of the day. We don't know when and what will be the precise modalities.
Ambassador, you bring us to the heart of the matter here. What is a real process that brings a two-state solution about, the kind that was trumpeted after the 1992 Oslo Accords and never came to be, never going to be easy, particularly in light of those 1967 borders, of what we've seen the last 500 days plus in the Gaza Strip, and a hardening of positions on both sides. Nevin Sanduka, for your organization, the Alliance for Middle East Peace, how do you do a process? We talk about the two-state solution. It just feels like kind of like rhetoric, empty rhetoric when people mm-hmm. say the mm-hmm. words. For you, how do you make that concrete?
Well, the Alliance for Middle East Peace, ALMEP, as you mentioned, is a network of 170 peace-building organizations that exist within civil society, both Palestinians and Israelis. That alone should tell you that the two-state solution is actually feasible. When you think of the number of peace builders that can actually reach up to thousands, both Palestinians and Israelis, the thing is, we were never given a chance to be heard. If you look at all the solutions that leaders are discussing, it's the classical two-state solution, and maybe they don't even know how it looks like or what that is. But if you look at the civil society and what we offer many different versions of the two-state solution, and we offer solutions that the people themselves are going to agree with because we work with the people, we understand the grassroots and what that actually means. So for the first time, we're actually offered the space to be heard in Paris on Friday, and we're offered the space actually to bring out the solutions and what we think. And for the first time, we're able to feed into the working groups that are happening in New York.
And what does a real process look like?
At the political level?
Yes, for next week, that they'll give the Saudis that feeling that, this is a real process on the road to something.
I think it starts with, what are we negotiating? Who is negotiating here for what? The recognition. It starts with a recognition of a Palestinian state. And then it also has to do a lot with reform. And as a Palestinian, I have to say, when I hear all the time that only Palestinians need to do the reform, that's amazing. But what about the other side that is doing and continuing this war? They didn't keep their word on the truce in Gaza, the last truce. They restarted the war again, and all the atrocities that we are witnessing. Both sides should be held accountable, and both sides should have reform. And the international community really has a role to play from the top-down approach. But at the same time, the bottom-up approach needs to also be heard and needs to be supported.
What is the international community? Up to now, it's usually been the United States.
No, I think we have given that role to the United States. The world is much stronger than just the United States.
All right, but concretely in 2025, who can make this happen? Put the radicals aside and and bring groups like yours into the limelight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who can do it?
Now we are in Paris, the working group, the global alliance that has the will, the Arabs, because we have put since, the Arabs have put forward in 2002, the Arab Peace Initiative. There is an international will. If the United States itself, I feel that United States is with Israel on one side, but then there's the world in another side that's actually wanting a different reality right now. And I feel that if we unite specifically under the global alliance, starting from tomorrow, Friday, onwards, then I can actually start that process.
It starts with a recognition of a Palestinian state. Do you agree with that, Naomi Bar-Yakov?
I think what a process is. Naveen was talking about the community role, and I think the community role is vitally important. And I think that communities, the peace will come from the communities because the people want that. But you're working bottom up and you're working top down and you're heading towards elections and all. You know, I mean, Palestine is currently divided. So when I say you're having elections, I mean, you're having elections. You will have elections in Palestine after you have a technocratic government. The Israeli government almost fell a couple of days ago. You know, it eventually will fall. Eventually there will be elections. And the preparation has to come also from European and states. I think the US has completely lost credibility as a, quote, I was never a neutral negotiator, ever. It was always sided with Israel, but the US were the lead negotiators. I think you asked earlier, you asked Bertrand whether Trump is more buddy-buddies or more interested in the Gulf than in Israel. Well, I think he is very interested in the Gulf. And the fact that he traveled to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and UAE in that order and did not stop over in Israel and is extremely, extremely significant. And I think he's pivots, and he certainly pivots much more than Macron. And it's a question, and I wouldn't compare at all how, you know, they shift. But the shift with Trump, he could listen and tune in to the Gulf because he's very interested in their money and in what they can offer. Because everyone says, oh, he doesn't have a strategy. What is his long-term strategy? His long-term strategy is to make himself and his family rich. And the deals are not with Israel. The deals are with the Gulf. So how is he going to balance that? And I think that's a very important issue to remember. And I think he does deeply respect, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, the Emir of Qatar, and this very... leaders in the royal family in the UAE. And I think their role is increasing. And what you're going to see in terms of mediation of a process is you're going to see a Gulf-led process with an organic build that Naveen was talking about. You know, the communities are leading with ideas. They're being heard. Tomorrow is a platform. New York next week is a continuation of that platform. Basically, what Paris is doing tomorrow, and they're insistent they're just doing it on the 13th, you know, one day, Friday, and they're having, I just read my invitation very, very, very carefully. And it is a prelude to New York. So Macron basically wants to take some ownership over the process and to say, we did the preparatory work. But it is very much what they call a preparatory conference for the bigger conference that at the moment Trump is against. But Trump will have to liaise with the Gulf, and ultimately the solution for Palestine and Israel is going to come from the people of Palestine and Israel, which of course includes Palestine, the West Bank and Gaza. And there is no others, and the Gulf states and the neighboring states, Arab and Egypt and Jordan, because you cannot do anything without Egypt and Jordan that already have peace treaties with Israel and have borders with Israel and Palestine. And you absolutely, absolutely can't do anything without the US. And then we can ask where Europe is. Well, it's about time that Europe got its act together and acted in a more united and forceful fashion. But if the Gulf and Europe lead, then the question is, you know, where does that leave us? And
now, yes, you usually hang your hat in London. You have a Labour government now, yes. Labour, which overcame... This reputation of under Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of being anti-Semitic. So therefore, how far will the Keir Starmer Labour Party go?
I think they'll go quite far, actually. I think they are leading. They already imposed sanctions on two right-wing ministers in Israel, Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, last week, together with a number of states you mentioned in your introduction, also including New Zealand and Norway, among the others. So, you know, again, they're doing it in cohorts, and that's, I think, what Macron will wait for. And I think the UK will go further. How far they will go, you know, it remains to be seen, but they will definitely go further. It also depends, of course, on what happens in Gaza. If there's continuing famine, basically, if people are continuing to be that hungry that they are dying, and malnourished babies are not developing properly or dying in the womb, that situation cannot continue. And the UK will take action. And I think that they are definitely moving towards a more proactive role. But just on the two states, which, you know, is what the subject matter is, there isn't any other alternative. You know, what is your alternative? You have the people. The Israelis are not going anywhere. The Palestinians are not going anywhere. This idea that the Palestinians can go elsewhere is lunacy. And they have to work out how to live together. And there have to be alternatives to the extremes. They have to be given a viable, healthy alternative. And that's urgent. It's beyond urgent.
Covering the story from Paris, Shirley Sitbon, do you feel as though here public opinion has shifted, or public opinion's grown weary and indifferent?
Difficult question. I mean, we're seeing many, many protests, but I don't know if it's increasing. But yeah, people are really getting extremely worried for the Palestinians. Really, they can't take this anymore. The situation is, you know, as you've said, beyond dramatic. So yes, people want real action and real change. At the same time, many people are still indifferent, as you see public opinion. When you look at the figures. I was just thinking about the change that needs to be made on the Israeli side, because we're talking about these extremists. But even the alternative, even if you encourage, you show the basic voter that there are alternatives, that there's hope, that there can be a future, even when you look, even if the Benjamin Netanyahu majority fails and you have the other side, the Naftali Bennett side that wins, that's not the left. That's not people who want a two-state solution. So there needs to be a significant, significant change, because the alternative, which the Israelis see as the left and the center, is not.
And we
that.
Saw a left-wing politician recently denounce the killing of children in Gaza, and he got crucified for it in the media.
It depends which media, because some support him. Yes. It really depends. But his figures did not really change. He remained the same. Actually, some people are saying we're now voting for him because of what he said. Other people are saying, "Hey, I was for you, but you shocked me." The thing is, he was talking on a live interview, and basically it was seen as if he was attacking the soldiers who have to go to do the army. Many have died. So this was the shocking part. But the fact that he said that, then he changed, he said it was the government I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And when he said that, then people really can understand that, because you can hear that all day long. And a majority of Israelis want to end this war. First of all, of course, for the hostages and for the soldiers, and to end this war. But also, more and more people are talking about what's happening with the Palestinians, especially in Gaza. So yes, there is a will to change, but the situation is much more complicated than during Oslo and in the 90s and in the 2000s. It's more complicated now.
Much more complicated, Nivit Sanduka, but you still believe?
Yes.
Absolutely.
First of all, I'm a mother. And I want my son, who's 15 years old, to grow in a better situation than I did. That's the first thing. The other thing is that if you think about it, if we give up now as peace builders, we're having right now 300 of them in Paris, if we give up, what is the alternative? Who's going to lead? Who is going to basically have their voice heard? It's the extremists on both sides. Actually, I just wanted to say about another change that's happening in Israel. The government sees the work of civil society as a threat, that they're threatening to tax the funding of these civil society organizations. Especially the ones that are mostly going to be affected are the ones who actually work on human rights and on peace building. So it is a threat to the Israeli government, the civil society. In addition, there has been many demonstrations recently within Israel, not only to bring back the hostages, but for the first time since the beginning of the war, they're also holding pictures of babies that were killed in Gaza. And they're marching towards the borders. So there's change within the Israeli civil society.
But is this a tiny minority? You heard Shirley Sifon say.
No, it's not a tiny minority. And it started at the beginning of the war in Jerusalem as a tiny minority. But ever since, like recently, maybe in the past 2 months or so, it has really grown significantly.
Bertrand Besancenot?
No, I fully agree with what has been said. Of course, it is difficult to know precisely where is the public opinion in Israel. But we can see that for nearly 2 years, you had hundreds of thousands of people in the streets criticizing the government. And during the last period, as this was said, you could see that emotionally, even in Israel itself, of course, the people see that Netanyahu is going much too far. We hear as well that his political situation is starting to be very difficult. Of course, but he stayed in power, but I don't know for how long. But many people think that if the war ends, and the only person who can impose the end of the war is, of course, President Trump. But if this happens, and especially under the pressure of the Gulf countries, as this was said, you might see different things. The population on both sides can see the situation in very different ways. We saw in history that, for example, Begin, who was a very hawkish person, at some point he signed the Oslo agreements. So it means that the things can change and they can change quickly. So we have to remain optimistic, even if it is difficult. It is clear that when you are in a time of confrontation, the people don't have in mind peace building. They are suffering.
That's what people have been saying since October 7th, 2023. Yes, right now people want revenge. People are scared. But don't worry. Afterwards, there'll be a change. But that change is not coming.
But for one reason, it is because Prime Minister Netanyahu is still going on with the same aggression. So this is the problem that we are faced with.
And he's also giving up on his own hostages as well. This is what's triggering
the Israelis. He did right from the beginning. We did right from the beginning, and I think opposition to Netanyahu is definitely growing.
Yeah.
It's definitely growing, without a shadow of doubt. I don't think that the two states in Israel, because Israel doesn't... The average Israeli or most Israelis don't know, and it's not clear-cut at all, what kind of security guarantees the state will get, you know, to ensure that another 7th October won't occur. Mm-hmm. And I think those, and that we asked about a process, you need to build all of those very, very important questions. And that, for me, is the key question, is if you want to advocate for a two-state solution in Israel, which I think is the only solution, I reiterate, it's the only way forward, the details of how Palestine will be secure and Israel will be secure, you know, are absolutely critical. Because unless that is crystal clear and that issue is solved, and it's a tricky one, the Israeli public will vote for Naftali Bennett and not for Yair Golan, who will... No Israeli politician is going to run on a platform of two-state solution, otherwise they won't win the election. So we also need to keep that in mind as observers, that there is a rhetoric for election and then there's action thereafter. But it doesn't mean to say that they're not fully aware of the fact that that is the only way forward and they actually
the Begin scenario.
If I may just continue that line of thought.
Of course.
I think when we talk about the two-state solution and the feasibility of it, it needs to come under the regional framework as well. And there needs to be a lot of economic investments. There needs to be a process of reconciliation. And there needs to be a process of both people seeing that, okay, with peace, there's prosperity, there's trust, there's our story, our narrative is being recognized on both sides. And really, that needs to be put under a regional framework. And there where the role of the Gulf comes in. Specifically, by the way, all these countries that signed the Abrahamic Accords, I believe so far they didn't put that pressure, but they set a very good example what normalization can look like for the Israelis.
All right.
They can
and the Saudis want it. And the Saudis really want it. And that the Saudis will push for two states because they want the economic deal.
Exactly.
They cannot do it it, you know.
And Israelis...
But to convince...
Israelis want it, but they don't... Israelis will want it. I mean, I'm putting the government and the extremes aside, but the Israelis need to be reassured that there will be security guarantees. Mm-hmm. For the Arab world... For all of the Arab world, it's crystal clear that if there is normalization, that's a security guarantee. That in and of itself for Israelis isn't sufficient. So that needs to be ironed out. For Palestinians, it's absolutely vital that the economic prosperity feeds in immediately, mm-hmm. and also for Israelis. And the and you need urgently to work on joint projects. Mm-hmm. So you have, you know, and you need to work on the trauma, both individual and collective, 100%. Because mm-hmm. both societies are deeply traumatized. So there are plenty of issues in the process that have to be
Each
dealt with.
Each side needs to hear each other's side's stories. By the way, when she's not on her screens, France 24's social media editor, Jade Heyou, likes to immerse herself in Parisian hip-hop culture. So when she heard that our panel was coming, that got her thinking.
In my spare time, I dance. Living in the hip-hop culture in France. So I wonder, is there any hip-hop dancers in Gaza? Yes, there is. Not just one, there's a team.
Me and Ajour, we make Breaking 48. It's the name of the team. Breaking is mean the break dance. 48 is mean 1948. It's the day for Nakba for Palestinian when they leave them country. We try to make to them some activities and to make them to forget the situation, even if a little bit, with our help.
But it's far from easy in Gaza.
Of course, I can't forget when we make the activities and make the circle for the kids in the schools or in the street, and the bomb happened and the kids run away. You are in this circle to help them to forget the genocide and the bomb happened, like make them run like this. We try to control. Sometimes we can control this circle and sometimes not. Yeah.
في غزة وسيلة صارت من أحد الوسائل اللي إحنا بنقدر نعبر مع اللي في داخلنا من خلال هذا الرياض.
أنا نفسي تخلص الحرب وأعيش زي أطفال العالم. إن أمارس الرياضة اللي أنا بلعب فيها بيك دونز هي بيكين 48 أنا وأطفال.
They still dancing even if they don't have the food. We are here. We also normal human Gazan people is like any people in the world. They have sport. They have dreams. They have goals. Yeah, I feel. I'm fine when I'm dance, even when I have hard times. But this is our resistance to keep us here, like we are here. Even on the rubble, we can dance. Yeah.
And they want to stay put inside of the Gaza Strip. How do you get, Niveen Sanduki, you're in Jerusalem, so you get both narratives, but mm-hmm. not everyone does. How do you get people to hear each other's sides?
It's one of the most difficult things to do because, unfortunately, media in Israel doesn't show what is happening in Gaza. And most of the Palestinians don't know what happened on October 7th in details. Most of us see what on different media channels that only focus on Gaza. They don't talk about the trauma of both sides. They don't touch on that feeling that for Israel, many Israelis, they felt the Holocaust. And for many Palestinians, we're still living the Nakba. So 1948. So it's really two people that extremely are traumatized. How do you bring people together? That's the role of our 170 members. They have the tools. They know the know-how of how to. We don't want to. I don't need. If you're an Israeli, I don't need to convince you about my narrative, and you don't need to convince me about your narrative. We have conflicting narratives, but what we do need to consider is a shared future for both of us. Is the shared vision.
And we're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately, because there's so much more to say. I wish we had another hour to talk about it. And you'll be talking about it, of course, on Friday at this conference here in Paris. I want to thank you, Niveen Sanduk. I want to thank Nomi Bar-Yakov, Ambassador Besancenot. I also want to thank Shirley Sitbon. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.